Hello, and welcome back to Just Hands. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I've got an exciting announcement this week. So as you guys know, I have had trouble putting out episodes at the rate that we were doing in the past, and I think I found a really good solution. So in the past, we've had a Just Hands membership group where a $20 a month membership fee to support the podcast gets you access to a private Just Hands Slack group, where you can ask me questions, post hands, where we have a pretty thriving strategy community, and also gets you access to premium podcasts. But the thing about that membership is that it's not tied in any way to the actual production of podcasts. So my thought was that doing a Patreon, so I don't know if you guys are familiar with Patreon, but it's a service where you can sign up to donate on a per episode basis. They also do per month, but I'm going to do per episode. And basically the point of that is that you guys, I'm sure, want more content. Many of you have reached out to me saying so. I want to give you more content. It's hard to find time. And so this way we can align incentives. I get paid when I produce. I don't get paid when I don't produce. And hopefully that'll result, I'm sure it will, in an increase in the number of episodes that are coming out on a monthly basis. So I'm going to have three tiers on the Patreon that are going to give you access to different things. If you sign up to donate at that level, $5 plus per episode will get you access to all the premium podcasts. $10 plus an episode will get you the premium podcasts plus membership in the Just Hands Slack group. And $50 a month plus will get you both of those things, plus a monthly 45-minute coaching session with myself, or if you prefer, with John Metz or James B., the two other coaches on the Just Hands roster. Or you can switch, you know, from month to month. It's up to you. Anyways, I'm really looking forward to getting this started. I think it's going to help a lot with getting you guys more episodes. I still really enjoy doing the podcast and would like to be recording more, but as you can see, it's just been a challenge. And also, you know, doing this is not free. We do pay an editor to edit the podcast, and I have someone who I pay to do all the social media stuff, and so it's not a totally, it's a low-cost operation, but it's not a zero-cost operation. So I really appreciate you guys' listenership for the past 3 years or so. Wow, it's been a long time. And so I want to, let's get to episode 200 quickly. And if you guys sign up at Patreon, that's patreon.com/justhands. I'll link to it in the show notes. That'll really speed up that process. I'll get you more episodes. It'll be great. I'm really looking forward to it. So hope to get your support. And I really want to thank you guys again for listening and enjoy this week's episode. Hello, and welcome back to Just Hands. I'm joined here by our favorite guest. Not even a guest at this point. I think I said the exact same thing last time we recorded, which was not so long ago. But you guys guessed it. It's James B. James, how you doing?
Doing well.
So James, how do you feel about a little rapid fire Just Hands action?
Yeah, I think, sometimes there's just a quick spot that people might be wondering about, and you don't need a whole episode for that. So it'll be good to address some of those.
Yeah, we're clearing out the mailbag a little bit. These are not necessarily spots that couldn't have been their own episode, but for whatever reason, we selected others in the past, and I still felt like these were interesting spots. And so rapid fire is not necessarily going to mean fewer decision points, but it's just going to mean we're going to give a little bit briefer of a take and get a little bit more volume. So let's try it.
I think we're known for being brief, so that's good.
See if we can contain ourselves. All right, this first one comes from Sugar House in Philly. 1-2. So the summary of the description of the players in the hand is, Hero is late 20s, clean cut, has about $1,000 in front of him, and that's a lot more than the rest of the table. Says he's been playing a tag style. Main villain is in his early 50s, who's kind of dressed business casual, and it seems like this villain is fairly savvy for 1-2 this age range. All right, so main villain has $400, Hero covers. We're nine-handed. Folds to the hijack. Hijack limps. Hero is in the cutoff.
raises to $12. This is 1-2. With Jack 10 suited, main villain calls $12 on the button. Small blind folds, big blind calls, hijack calls. Four to the flop, $45 after rake. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, not too much to say here. Go. Yeah. A teeny bit bigger maybe, but I think it's fine.
Yeah, I think 15 is fine. Maybe sometimes you can get away with bigger, but I like that it's not 8. Flop comes Jack of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 3 of hearts. Checks the hero. What are you thinking here, James?
We're 4 ways?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you can go either way. Yeah, I think a lot of the calling ranges of these players will be pretty like offsuit Broadway dense. Like though, so villains can have like 6. I guess it's not 16, but 8 combos of queen jack, 8 combos of king jack, 8 combos of ace jack. So I think it could be a little dicey starting off with a bet, but definitely not planning to fold this street.
Yeah. I typically would bet here. I think that I'm more likely to check actually a hand like queen jack, since queen jack needs protection or needs a lot less protection against the likely overcard hands. These players quickly have a good amount of queens. And when we have a 10, we block a lot of our opponents from being able to like turn a strong second pair type of hand that our queen jack could then target. So I think betting is fine. I think both are fine. We're not going to fold to the next player acting. I think if we were in relatively earlier position, I would like checking more because we would benefit more from getting information from our opponents. But here, if we don't bet and we have a jack, we can assume that button is not going to be betting at any high frequency. And so we're going to go to the turn without very much knowledge about what the early position players have.
Yeah, and we can go like, we can bet this street, and then if the button folds, it's really nice for us. And then we can consider checking back some turns or betting turns and checking back some rivers to avoid bloating the pot with our top pair medium kicker right now.
Yeah, for sure. And getting to squeeze the in-position player out at a reasonably high frequency is nice. Like that player has the worst relative position facing our bet. And so even though they have a positional advantage, they're going to have to fold relatively frequently. So getting that player to fold something like especially a savvier player, something like a 6-5.
King, queen, maybe.
Yeah, these hands, well, definitely in relationship to not betting at all. But even if we can get something like 6-5 to fold here by an in-position player, I think that could easily be good for our overall expected value. Hero checks. Fearing that on such a dry board, a $20 c-bet will result in 3 folds most of the time. I wouldn't worry about that. If you can get 3 folds here with Jack-10, not a bad outcome. You're risking 20 to win 45, and you can get 3 players to fold their equity. You're doing pretty well. So I wouldn't be as concerned, I think, with getting value as Hero is here. Sure enough, villain bets $20, early position folds. Hero check raises to $60. What do you think about the check raise?
Seems like a little bit of an overplay to me. I'm not sure what worse hands are going to be calling us. Yeah, I think the villain on the button probably has a lot of jacks that are just going to have a pretty easy time calling it down. And then if the villain was betting something like nines here, then getting them to fold like isn't particularly great since those are drawing pretty thin against our hand.
Yeah. No, I think those are great points. Hero got to this street and wrote that he felt confident he had the best hand. And I think that if you're looking at it as if you just have the best hand, then it could be more plausible to check raise. But I think that was a mistake to think that. You'll often have the best hand, but you don't certainly have the best hand. And when the in-position player bets, you will have the best hand far less frequently.
Yeah, you're funneling them into continuing with hands that are beating you.
Yeah, and I think the range that bets here is already doing kind of well against you. Just because, I mean, there are a lot of stabs, sure. And against a player who's more aggressive, there's going to be enough stabs that we prefer, or that we're doing relatively well against this bet. Also, smaller pairs can bet. So I definitely am not, even for 1 second, considering a fold, but I already think that like this is not a range that like we're going to make a huge amount of money against across three streets. So I prefer a call. We face a very quick, an insta-call, hero writes. And our hero writes also that when he got called, it sort of dawned on him that these better hands existed. And he might be a little bit transparent. Kern is a four of spades, so rainbow board. You like going to continue here?
I think I'd go for a check here.
I would too. All right, rapid fire, check him. You've got a bluff catcher, we're checking. So Phelan bets $85 into 165, giving Hero about 3-1 on a call. What are you doing here?
It's kind of tough because I probably never would have check raised his hand. At this point, I think it's kind of close, but I think we could let it go just because, yeah, there's like, I think all of our opponents, queen jack, king jack, ace jack, is likely to take this line. And, you know, maybe some sets as well. And I'm not really sure where the bluffs are coming from, but I don't think there's going to be enough here that we want to continue. And, yeah, and I don't think there's a worse hand that's really betting for value.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should fold. I think Hero wrote that he felt like folding top pair to this price would be exploitable. And I kind of agree that like ace-jack would be a little bit exploitable to fold. But I don't, and maybe folding jack-10 is exploitable. Like, you know, maybe jack-10 does check raise here at some frequency, at, you know, in like a GTO circumstance and then shouldn't fold. I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. But I think against the field, I'm very comfortable folding here. Keep in mind that like you have, and your opponent also realizes you could have hands like queens, kings, aces here. And those hands I think are much better to continue with because you unblock your opponent having like strong top pair that might just be value betting from behind. So that's very valuable to you. When you have jack 10, that possibility worth top pair betting is very, very remote. So yeah, I think fold is best. Hero had a gut feeling that top pair was not best at this point. He decided to turn it into a bluff on any river higher than a 10. 335 in the pot going to the river.
He's going for a check call lead.
Check call lead to like rep two pair, I guess.
Or an over pair maybe.
Yeah. That seems like a bad plan to me. Because Hero's already identified that like villain has a lot of queen jack, king jack, ace jack in the post. So that plan doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Yeah, don't do that. You might get like turn two pairs to fold, but there's not that many turn two pairs. Spoiler alert, this is the Rapid Fire edition. Villain has 6-4. So you might have been able to get that hand to fold, but probably not. And if your opponent has 6-4, they've got even more 7-5. That's not folding. So I would not go with this plan. River's the queen of diamond. Board is now jack, 6-3-4 queen with two diamonds. Hero feels unlikely to win if the river is checked and had already decided to fire on any river higher than a 10. Hero bets 115 to 335. Villain thinks for 45 seconds, then side calls and shows 6-4 for turn two pair. So we kind of already talked about that. All right. I don't think you're going to endorse this play, so I think we should move on.
I agree.
Yeah, I think the key here for Hero is when you started the flop thinking you had the best hand, you led yourself to overplaying your hand. And once you overplayed your hand, you felt like you had no good options, which was true because you were up against a very strong range. And I like the creativity and looking for later street bluffs, understanding that your hand was no longer that strong, but I just don't think this is the candidate or the situation to be bluffing. And I do actually think that if you are bluffing, you should go for a larger sizing, although I don't think that would have worked in this instance. Tournament time.
Oh boy.
I know, it's exciting. All right, going down to Hard Rock in Tampa, Florida. Nice casino. Triple stack, 30K guaranteed tournament. $250 buy-in. In this hand, there's one villain, an Asian guy, early to mid-30s. Seems to be competent. They haven't been playing together that long. Villain has roughly 40K. Hero covers with about 50K. Blinds are 200, 400. So villain has 100 bigs. We have 120 bigs. Or sorry, 125. And there's a big blind ante.
Is this the chip accumulation phase?
No, I think it's pretty early. So I would say we're still in survival.
All right.
Especially given the buy-in, my guess is that we're in like level 3.
Sounds good.
Or level 2. I guess we either started off 1-1 with a 100 ante or 1-2 with no ante. And now we went to 1-2 with an ante or 2-4. So something like that. Middle position opens for 1,500. Dylan calls from the cutoff. Hero is on the button with king 9 of hearts. 3 bets to 4,000. I think this is a good play. It's not necessarily the kind of thing you have to do every time. I also think that being a little bit more merged at this stage in the tournament can make sense. But I think this is a hand that like a lot of people use as a 3-bet. I might go slightly bigger at this stage in the tournament. But yeah, I think we should have a high 3-bet frequency button versus cutoff, and I think king 9 of hearts is a fine hand to include, even at this stage in the tournament. I think you can also call, and that is maybe a little bit more in line with like what your incentives are here, but this is the rapid fire, and so I think that the 3-bet is totally reasonable.
Sorry, was there an open and then a call, and then we 3-bet?
No. Oh, there was. There was. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, James.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that makes me like it a little bit more. The cutoff is probably capped, so we can kind of leverage like the hijack against the cutoff if they don't know what the cutoff's going to do, if they have one of their weaker holdings that they're opening, and the cutoff doesn't have the top end of their range. So yeah, I think it's a pretty good choice.
I like the hand choice. I think with like an open and a call, we want to be a little bit more polarized. But I would definitely make it bigger. I think 4K is too small. I just think you almost never get two folds. And with king 9 of hearts, we want to at least have a decent chance of getting folds here. So I'd be thinking like 6 or 7K. I think a good way to think about this is like, at this stage in the tournament, we want to either win this preflop or on the flop. So I think like, we're happy risking like somewhere between like 12 and 18K here. And if we're risking that much more without a ton of equity, we're probably making a mistake in the survival phase. And so I think like trying to get to that leverage point earlier in the hand, like maybe pre-flop or setting it up on the flop, you'll do well playing that kind of strategy. But we don't want to be like 3-betting and then having to like double or triple barrel. So yeah, I think the size is too small. So I went 15, call, hero, 3-bets to 4K, original razor folds, villain makes the call. So villain's in the cutoff. So villain called twice preflop. Heads up to the flop with 10.5K in the pot and effective stack is 36. Flop is 4-7-10 rainbow, 1 heart. Villain leads for 6,000. What are you thinking here?
This is pretty interesting. I'm not really sure what to make of the lead here. I think I might be a little bit nitty and let it go. What's the villain bets? How much?
6K to 10.5.
So like half pot, like a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can let it go. I think, I mean, you could try and go for it against this villain, and if you think they're like really capable of making a big fold, we could maybe float here, or I don't think floating is very good here. I think if we continue, I kind of like continuing with a raise. Is it the 10 of hearts that's on the board?
We don't know.
If it's the 10 of hearts, I could maybe, I like to raise a little bit more because on a turn heart, we can polarize a bit more and the villain won't have those auto calls with like when the villain has 10x of hearts. But yeah, I think overall I would lean towards letting it go. And then maybe if the 10 is a heart and like we've seen this villain like make some big folds before, we had a little bit more history. I think I could go for a raise. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we should fold. And I think that this gets back to, I feel very pressured for having said this. It gets back to like, how much do we want to risk to try and win this pot? And on the one hand, you're thinking about equity and expected value, chippy V of the current hand. But on the other hand, you're also thinking about like your tournament life, your ability to like navigate and capitalize on future situations. And I don't think your chance of winning here is high enough to want to like, for me to want to put in the amount of chips I think it's going to take to win.
Yeah. And stacks aren't super deep here as well. Like it's like 3.5 SPR on the flop. So
yeah,
we're going to have to risk most of our stack to win this pot here. And it probably won't work that often. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm thinking about it too much from a cash game perspective.
Yeah, going broke is really bad in a tournament because our last chips are our most valuable chips. And if we have a future skill edge, that goes to zero when we lose all our chips. So your EV in this tournament comes from surviving and being able to extract EV from future situations. So yeah, if we had a like two over cards here in the back doors, if you had a king jack of hearts instead of king nine of hearts, I could see more of a case for floating because now at least there's six cards that give you strong top pair, which is it rates to be the best hand enough, then there's more of a case. But I still think that would be a reasonable fold at this stage, just because your opponent is allowed to have a very strong hand. Fours, sevens, tens, jacks, queens, like you don't know. People are weird. So we could also just be drawing to like the second best hand. You have reverse implied odds against King 10. Also, if we had a hand like King Jack, then Jack 10 would be a similar issue. Or 8-9 would be an issue if we had King Jack. So I think both these are folds. And this gets back to why I think sizing up preflop is really useful. So I think when you make it like 7K pre, and you're getting to a flop with like 16K in the middle, your opponent just leads far less. Your range looks a lot stronger preflop. When you raise to 4K, it doesn't look very strong. It might be balanced, but it doesn't look strong, which is important as a consideration when you're bluffing. And yeah, now all of a sudden, instead of us being able to put in like a 7 or 8K c-bet and put a lot of pressure on our opponent, we're facing 6K, and now to win without spiking a king on the turn, we're going to have to put in probably at least like 18 or 20K out of our like 46K stack. So that's a lot. And potentially we could get sucked into losing quite a bit here. And so avoiding that possibility is also worthwhile. So I'd fold. Hero decides to float, and I get it. Like, your range is stronger. You have equity. You're in position. But your hand sucks. Your opponent clearly doesn't believe you. And I would just fold. Turn is the ace of hearts. So we have the nut flush draw now. Villain leads for 10K. And so we have, or the effective stack is like 30K before this lead of 10K. So James, this is supposed to be our card, right?
Yeah. What's he doing betting it?
Yeah. Is he not scared?
I don't know. Well, I don't think we should fold anymore. I keep going back and forth. Maybe I'm not super up on my tournament game, but so I would say, like, maybe if we're more concerned about survival, then maybe just calling here would be the better play. But I kind of like going for it. Put him to the test for his stack, and if he was fooling around with a 10, I imagine we'll get the fold. And I think a lot of his range could be 10x. That said, if he's betting our hand, our like ace here, he could have a stronger hand. But our hand was equity against everything in his range. I don't know. We are getting a good price on the call, so yeah, I think it's. Could go close, could go either way.
Yeah, so we're getting 3-1. I think I personally prefer to just call. I think that this bet can be a few things, and I'm not ruling out the possibility of bluffing at some point in this hand. But I just don't think we're winning here enough through a shove to make me prefer it to call. Our opponent is allowed to have an ace or a very strong hand. And if they had a 10, I think most of the time they would check here, understanding that this is a better card for you. And so them not checking makes me think that it's more likely to be a relatively strong hand. But if it is a 10, and this is sort of like them trying to get you to fold maybe an overpair that they thought you... that they were aware that you had and then felt like this could be a good bluffing opportunity. I think floating and just trying to draw to a heart or a king, and then if you face a check on the river considering a jam, and that's a point where it's like kind of hard for you to be bluffing, such that I think a lot of 10x should just fold. So when you face a check, I think you have a fairly profitable shove, whereas when... like the hands that would have just snapped you off now will typically just barrel off. Since your range is not that highly incentivized to bluff on the river, your range is kind of bluff catcher heavy at this point. So I think you just do better bluffing through a call. So I would just call here and evaluate rivers and hope to turn a heart. Hero does jam, which is not, it's obviously not an unreasonable play. I think it's a play that wins chips. But I would be more concerned, I think, than Hero was about the fact that Villain is barreling on such like a clearly good card for our range. The ace is not like a card where when we have kings, we're going to be like so worried about it. So when like it's a strange spot for a 10 to want to bluff. Anyway, Villain calls with ace 3 offsuit, so we lose. We break. Yeah, it's an unfortunate hand to run into. I think it comes down to your opponent didn't believe you. They thought that this 3-bet looked weak and then decided to float you pre-flop and then figured they could just win through aggression on the flop and then got lucky. And they weren't necessarily wrong. I don't know. This might just be your standard sizing. But if it's not, then you have to give your opponent a little bit of credit here for kind of realizing that this was maybe an opportunistic 3-bet. And yeah, so I think the main adjustment here, which will clean up the whole hand for you, is just 3-bet bigger. And then you really can't lose here if you 3-bet bigger in this spot. Like your opponent is pretty unlikely to float you on the flop or even call pre-flop if you make it 7K, in my opinion. So results oriented, I think the bigger sizing would have been a lot more effective. You want to do one more quick one?
Let's get it.
There is a remote possibility that we're talking about a hand we've already talked about. If we are, I'm sorry. But I'm almost positive we haven't done either of these.
I'll remember.
Yeah. So this is another tournament hand. $175 buy-in. Sydney, Australia. Right before the end of day two. There's two players in the pot. 40-year-old decent sticky player, a bit too wide pre, has been opening liberally and playing wider than he should. I guess that must be villain. Hero's playing 85K at the 1.5-3-3 level. And is this right before the end of day two or three? Or back for day two, because this is the end of day one. So we're probably in the money in a $175 buy-in. But maybe not. Maybe we'll find out. So here's playing 85 at 1.5-3-3. So like 28 bigs. And Phelan covers. So regardless, this is going to be like an ICM or sort of like a reverse ICM situation for us, where our opponent can put ICM pressure on us, and it's likely to be somewhat to very significant depending on where we're at in the tournament. Hero is in the low jack and raises king, queen, offsuit to 6.5K. Villain calls and the blinds fold. I don't think we know.
Would you ever fold here pre-flop if you were like one of the lower medium stacks? Be pretty tight.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like we're at a tough stack size to be raising a lot. To me, it just comes down to like how often am I getting 3-bet? Because we have a stack size that's very vulnerable to 3-bets. But a lot of the field doesn't 3-bet that much. So this is the end of the day, so probably we have some sort of read on our table. And if we think we can avoid getting 3-bet a lot, then I think it's a very clear open. And if we are going to get 3-bet a good amount, I still think there's a case for opening it. You know, there is an ante in the pot. Like, we have to be competing for pots.
Would you ever include this into a limp range?
Yes. I think in a circumstance where I was getting 3-bet a lot, you can consider a limp. Knowing where we are in relationship to, like, the money bubble would be helpful in determining, like, which of the options is best. But I think raising is often going to be the best play. I like the sizing. So we get called by imposition. We don't know exactly what position. Flop is jack of clubs, eight of clubs, five of diamonds. And our read is that this player is sticky and a bit too wide pre. So what do you think about leading here?
Do we have a club?
We have a club.
I think this one it's one that could definitely go either way. Like, I'm pretty sure a solver is going to mix bets and checks here.
Yeah.
If our opponent is sticky, we could consider going with a check. There's definitely, like, a lot of cards that we can barrel on, like an ace. I think it's a nice card to barrel on. A 10 kind of helps our opponent's range, so we might not want to continue barreling on that, although it does give us a lot more equity.
Yeah, I think this is one of these, like, it kind of looks like it might be a reasonably dry flop, but it's not at all. It's super not dry. And it's just the kind of flop that I think it's really actually a lot better for our opponent, given that our opponent has very good coverage relative to us. Our opponent is in position, which is really important on this board, and our opponent has us out chipped. So I think like our actual c-bet frequency on this board is going to be really low. I think zero is appropriate. Not necessary, but appropriate. But I think that like things that might appear to be borderline start shifting heavily towards checks. It's not an insane bluff, like if we have a low, you know, bluffing frequency, but I think playing this as like a check likely call is going to be a lot better.
I think our over pairs can probably stack off here. So,
yeah, they're going to have to.
Yeah. So that's something that, I don't know. I think I like continuing with our over pairs. So I think this could be something to mix into a betting range, but, yeah, you're right that the board's, very dynamic and probably a little bit more, our opponent probably has a little bit more advantage here.
Yeah. The other thing, the part of the problem is our opponent just has a lot of Jack X that kind of has to go with it too.
Yeah.
And that's good when we have over pairs and bad when we have King Queen. But yeah, just really hard to get like a Jack, an 8, 10, 9, Queen 10, two overs, clubs, like 9, 7, 7, 6, 6, 5, 10s, 9s. There's a lot of hands that continue. It's not so bad for us to just like shrug and lose here and have 26 bigs. We reduce our options a lot if we end up with like a 20 big blind stack or even like a 15 or 10 big blind stack, which if we try and win through bluffing is going to be a relatively common outcome. So yeah, Hero C bets for 7.5K. And faces a quick call. The turn is the three of hearts, which I will say is like, it's a good card for us. Like I think blinks favor us significantly relative to like anything that interacts with the board. I still would be hesitant to bluff here because now we actually are kind of like blocking a lot of the weaker draws or weaker hands that are likely to fold. Hands like other king, queen, queen 10, queen 9, king 10, those sorts of hands.
Our read was that our opponent is sticky as well. So yeah, that would disincentivize continuing to bluff here.
Yeah, I will. It's not crazy though. We do block a lot of like the stronger value. So I think at this point, continuing is not crazy. I like the sizing that Hero chose, 17.5K. He writes intending to fold weak flush draws, middling pairs, and continue the story that I have a monster. I think that is roughly the plan. I wouldn't be surprised if we get like some weaker pairs to fold. So I think this is solid. Although you do just kind of sometimes have to. Like the main way you beat a sticky player is you value it more and bluff less. And that's why I'm just hesitant. Because you're saying that you're getting middling pairs to fold and you probably should, but you might just not. And so this is just a spot where like your Jack X and Queens Plus does really well and your bluffs have a really tough time. But you know, it's a good story. River is the two of clubs. Hero tanks for around 30 seconds before moving all in for around 60K.
I don't know. It's going to be a high variance play for sure, which is maybe not what we want to do in tournaments. But, I mean, if this player is retaining... Like, it's interesting. If this player is retaining, like, a lot of 8x and, like, pocket pairs on the turn, then, yeah, I think it could make sense to go all in on the river, but we kind of have to... I think it's important to have consistent logic. Like, were we betting turn? When do we think he's funneling? Like, was our plan to bluff this river because we were kind of like stringing him along and then we got a good river? Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I'm not sure what I think about it entirely.
Yeah. So this bet is, here's what we have to realize about this bet. We now need a lot of like pairs to fold because your opponent does just have a flush a good amount. We have a flush blocker. That's nice. But we actually don't have like, we could have a better flush blocker. Like king, a lot of the king X suited probably doesn't, it doesn't get here actually that often. Like king, queen, ace, king, probably three bet, at least some frequency pre-flop. King jack can't happen. King 10, king 9, possible. We block those, that's nice. King 7 and lower is not so likely. So I think having the ace as a blocker is a lot more valuable here. We just block a lot more combos. And also when our opponent has the ace of clubs, jack, it's a really easy call where king of clubs, jack is a tougher call, although probably both these hands call. So blocking that is nice. Like, not a crazy candidate. But again, it just comes down to like, you know that there are a certain amount of flushes out there and you always lose your whole stack anytime your opponent has a flush. Your opponent is allowed to have like a set or two pair that's slow played and just calls. And if your opponent just decides not to fold like jack X or 8X or 10s or 9s or something, then we lose. And so we need a lot to go right. And so I think I would just fold. We need this to work a lot. So there's about 60K in the pot. We're risking 60K.
And a lot of our over pairs aren't going to bet this river for value.
They might just because like yeah. It's low SPR and there might just not be a better way to play. But yeah, like you need to win this more than 50% of the time because you're risking 1-to-1. But the one you win is worth less than the one you lose by a lot. And so you need this to work like 60%+ of the time. And I don't think it's going to. So I would just check fold. And it's not impossible that you check and win. It's unlikely. Your opponent can have 6-7, 9-10, like, I don't know, 9-7.
King queen.
Yeah, who the hell knows? Like, it could happen. So you have a little coming your way through a check, but not much. So yeah, I think I would just give up here. Yeah, here. So villain calls, tanks for about 5 minutes, and then calls, and he had king eight for a middle pair, which is not a great call in my opinion. But we know we're up against a loose, undisciplined player, so it's not the kind of thing that we would have rounded to zero or anywhere near close to that, making this, or, you know, at the outset.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point, talking about the flush combos that we're actually blocking. I think sometimes players aren't rigorous enough. They just think about, like, oh, I had a blocker, so it must be, like, a pretty good bluff. But yeah, how relevant is our king of clubs? And I think he did a good job going through it. But yeah, the ace of clubs will just be walking, you know, like whatever, like 8-7 extra combos that we want to be blocking. So, and that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah. I think
when we bluff with that,
I think the queen of clubs is an even starker example. Like, I think the queen of clubs is kind of like a nothing blocker at this point. Because ace, queen, king, queen, three bet a good amount. Queen, 10, queen, 9 are flopped like royal flush, you know, draws. Or not, mm-hmm. royal flush, straight flush draws. and just will often play aggressively. Either raise the flop or just shove the turn over your bet with that kind of hand. Not always, but a lot. And so that is a much less valuable blocker than something like the ace of clubs. Anyway, yeah, I think the overall thought process like makes sense in this hand, but you didn't take into account your opponent's profile, even though you mentioned it in your description before starting this hand. And I think that would shift you towards just checking flop, and that would have saved you a lot of money here. But yeah, otherwise, very reasonable types of thought processes. I do think this play, it's going to occur at some frequency, theoretically. And so I don't think you can feel too bad about it, other than that I think it was probably avoidable. And in that sense, you should feel terrible about it. I'm just kidding. But you can wreck this guy by just not bluffing.
Yeah. And I think against like a lot of tight opponents, this is a pretty good line.
It's also a much better line if you have 100K and he has 85K. Hero mentions that if Villain had called him was wrong, he would only have five bigs, which is true. It's like, you don't want to only have five bigs, but it's way better to have five bigs than zero bigs. It's a very, very big difference. So you're risking a lot more than your opponent's risking, which is the nature of tournaments and why we can be much more aggressive when we have a big stack. You're just literally risking less money. All right, rapid fire. We got like three hands in probably about 50 minutes or so. So yeah, that was good.
It's pretty good for us.
Yeah. Well done, James. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys next week or so.